Our friends who clued us in to the Bonjour effect in France have some new insights to share with us today on Travel with Rick Steves. They'll tell us how Spanish has become one of the world's most spoken languages. That's in just a minute. A little later in the hour, Spanish guides share tips to prepare you for your first trip to Spain and what to look forward to that's going to be different from what you might expect back home. With all the political wrangling in the United States over its immigration policies concerning people from south of the border, the nation's long and intimate relationship with its Spanish-speaking neighbors is often overlooked. In fact, in the United States, we're already one of the top Spanish-speaking countries in the world. So how in the first place did a dialect spoken by just a handful of shepherds up in northern Spain eventually become the world's second most spoken language? Jean-Benoit Nadeau and Julie Barlow are the husband and wife team who've examined the history and role of first the French language in their book, The Story of French, and now they're examining the same story for Spanish. Their book is called The Story of Spanish, and they join us now to share their intriguing biography of Spanish. Hola, amigos.
Hola.
Hola.
All right. So, yeah. Last time we spoke, we were all in the French mode, and now we've got this book, which is kind of like a biography of Spanish. What is the importance of the Spanish language on our planet today?
It's a large language. It's spoken by about 420 million people in 20 countries. Hmm. So it has a large native base, contrary to French, for example, which has a small native base.
Right.
It's a language also that has a peculiarity. It's actually less taught outside of its natural sphere, except for three countries. There's three countries where it's very largely taught as a second language: the United States, Brazil, and France.
Hmm.
These three countries make up about, I would say, 70% of the learners outside of the Hispanic sphere.
So that's interesting. There's two dimensions of the impact of a language then. How many people speak it natively and how many people are learning it as a second language, and it's not always correlated, eh?
Not
at all. But one of the interesting things and one of the motivations for writing the book was this realization we had that it was, growing as a second language, obviously, in the United States, but that the United States itself was becoming a kind of Hispanic country. And the United States, as we tell the story in the book, that the United States has its own Spanish language academy. One of the interesting things about Spanish, unlike, say, French, is that it's very decentralized. The control of the language and the standards of the language are managed among the 20 or 22 Spanish-speaking countries. And the United States is one of them, and it's an important growing center. So we thought that was really interesting, and we did quite a bit of the research for the book we did while we were living in Phoenix, Arizona.
Okay.
And we were looking at, what was happening in the dynamics of the United States.
The case of the United States is very interesting because we're talking about 50 million Spanish-speaking people in the United States. It's almost as if the United States grew a country of the size of Spain.
That's the size of Spain, yeah.
That's quite underestimated linguistic power then, 50 million
yes.
people in a very important country from economics and politics and so on.
One aspect I find even more fascinating is that in the discourse today, we talk about the Hispanics entering the country and all, but historically, it's the United States that entered the Hispanic sphere. Like all of the Southwest, starting from Texas to California, was Spain.
Oh, so in other words, we took that, we bought it or we conquered it or we annexed it and
you
we
annexed
moved
them.
In. So it was Spanish-speaking first and we
yes.
moved in. Is that why I looked at a chart in your book and it shows clearly the South and the Southwest and the West Coast along with Florida is where the most Spanish speakers are in the United States. I was thinking that would be more immigration, but actually it does mirror who was there when we annexed that territory.
Yes,
exactly. When we were living in Phoenix, we were kind of stunned. I mean, the people that you would think are the immigrants actually understood the land and they understood, people were harvesting cactus in this neighborhood that we were living in and to make food out of it, they understood the climate. It's their climate.
They were doing that a long time before the Louisiana Purchase or whatever.
Exactly, exactly. And they're still doing it. And the rest of the white people are standing around wondering what's going on. And the Latinos are wandering the streets with garbage bags,
Let me get this. This is interesting because a lot of Americans have an anxiety about our country, becoming less pure English and so on. But when you really look at the history, there's always been a substantial minority of people, or at one time a majority of people, speaking Spanish in the South and the Southwest.
Yes, yes. And in the center, Mississippi area was French. So you have that history. And remember when I was a student, we used to go to Tex-Mex restaurants in Montreal and saying, ah, this is not real Mexican food, you know, to realize many years later that Tex-Mex is another brand of Mexican
so
food.
That is something. It makes it, it's not just a tacky commercial thing. It's just a
different region.
Of a long time ethnic reality.
It's its own brand. And the entire cowboy culture in the United States was actually created in Spain, in Spanish, by Mexicans. All the vocabulary, stampede, all that is completely derived from Spanish.
Ah, Bronco.
That's right. Yeah.
Wrangler.
It all comes from
Wrangler.
That.
It's endless.
All right. This is Travel with Rick Steves. We're talking with Jean-Benoit Nadeau and Julie Barlow about their book, The Story of Spanish. Before we get deeper into our discussion, Jean-Benoit and Julie, tell us about writing this book and what's your goal in writing the book?
Okay. Well, we had the idea, I mean, we had written The Story of French, which is this sort of look at the history and how the French was born and spread across the planet and what were the factors that turned it into an international language. And so we decided to do the same thing for Spanish. And it's a similar story, but in many ways, more ups and downs. I mean, Spanish, as you mentioned in the intro, starts out as this language of shepherds, basically, in northern Spain. And then encounters these historical moments where, and all languages are like that, where it's sort of make or break, you know. Spain could have become Arabic speaking. It could have been dominated by different waves of immigration over history. And it had its kings that made fundamental decisions that shaped the language. And so it's like a book you would read for a cultural background, but very centered on just how the language made it. I mean, it's a success story.
Like the name, The Story of Spanish, that pretty much says it all. And let's just trace very quickly the growth of Spanish, because all of Iberia did not speak Spanish. It started up in the north with shepherds. And then, and just like blitz us through this up until today, how did it come to be the language of 400 million people?
One of the most fascinating aspects is that, well, there was the Reconquista in Spain, naturally, but it's complicated by the fact that most of the Arabs in Spain were actually Spanish. They were just Muslim. And in fact, some of the older texts of Iberic or Hispanic Romance, which is the language, that the Latin language that predated Spanish, are actually not written in Roman alphabet, but in Arabic. But it's not Arabic. It's, you read it and it's Spanish.
It's written Spanish in Arabic script.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. So that's how it started. But with the Reconquista, naturally, what happened is that of the many kingdoms in the north of Spain, Castile took the upper hand. At around 1492, about three things happened at the same time that are critical in the history of the language. But one of them is that the king and the queen, Fernando and Isabella, decided that their kingdom would not be named Castile anymore, but Spain. And that was to, you know, like the English recalled themselves British because they wanted to be unifying all the kingdom. And this king and queen did that. And it was at the same time that they sent that explorer, Columbus, across the ocean in search of the road to India. He naturally inadvertently discovered a new continent that nobody could imagine. And what's peculiar then about the history of Spanish is that Spain was not very populated. It had about 5 million people, which was less, just about as much as the British Isle. About a quarter, no, half a million of them over the next two centuries went to the colonies.
Okay.
And then another historical accident that had nothing to do with the greatness of Spain is that they actually not only discovered a continent, but they discovered a continent with two civilizations, most focusing here on the Aztecs and the Inca, each of which had more population than Western Europe. And they became, for all sorts of reasons, they got the upper hand. And then they essentially established themselves as rulers of a gigantic kingdom, most of which was not Spanish speaking.
This is so interesting to put this together. And Castilian is still the name of the basic Spanish language, isn't it?
In some countries. Some countries still call Spanish Castilian, and some countries call Spanish
Did it originate as Castilian and then it became Spanish, just like Castile became Spain?
Yes, it's always a rebranding.
And then to review again, 1492, we've got that new, grander feeling for Castile, which is now Spain. We've got Columbus, quote, discovering America and opening this area up for conquistadors. And we've also got the end of the Moorish occupation of Iberia as they're pushed out back into Africa. And then we've got this amazing story of a handful of conquistadors who happen to speak Spanish being able to essentially take over what is today Latin America. And that had a lasting impact on the growth of the language.
Very subtle, though, because in fact, it took a good three centuries before Spanish took a full hold of Mexico and Peru. In fact, for a long time, the language that was spoken by the Aztec and the in Peru by the Quechua were the languages that actually progressed in those areas.
After 1492, after Cortez and so on. Jean-Benoit Nadeau and Julie Barlow are exploring the story of Spanish with us right now on Travel with Rick Steves. So now, when I'm thinking of languages, I always hear, you know, Goethe made German into a serious language, or Shakespeare was the birth of the, you know, High English, or Dante was the father of the modern Italian language. And when it comes to Spanish, we think of Cervantes, who wrote Don Quixote, establishing classic Spanish. What does that mean, and how important are these sort of thresholds in the maturity of the language?
It's important, but I think it's important to understand that prior to that, some very fundamental things happen in the language. You know, even prior to the conquistador, you have a king in the 14th century who actually standardizes Spanish. It's an important movement, an important thing to happen to a language before it become used.
King James Bible would be standardizing it in English.
Is a king who set out to make Spanish into something worthwhile to use.
And Alfonso.
And French had the same thing, in fact, a little later. So it's interesting that Spanish became earlier, and a dictionary, a grammar, is written just prior to 1492.
It happened
in fact,
the same year.
It's published the same year. And so the author of the dictionary took the dictionary to Queen Isabella and said, you know, I have a grammar. And she's like, so? and no one really understands how important this is, but this is sort of the basis on which the language is usable and standard.
We have insider advice for enjoying your first trip to Spain and for viewing the vast art collection at the Prado in Madrid a little later in the hour. There's more with Julie and Jean-Benoit on the story of Spanish and even how it influences American English today. That's all just ahead on Travel with Rick Steves.